Welcome to this episode of Turkish TV Time. Today we're talking about Ethos slash Bir Başkadır episode 7, so the penultimate episode of the season. And I am actually drinking something tea adjacent, which is mulled hot apple cider, which is delicious.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Any tea from the rest of the team?
I had a glass of water, which I would argue is also tea adjacent.
I had lemongrass water.
Oh,
fancy.
I don't know what you call that in English, but like in Colombia, it's normal to have like infusions after dinner to like help with digestion, in theory.
Sounds
I don't know
healthy.
If that's true or not.
I don't think it would harm you, you know, at the, you know. At worst, it would just have neutral effect.
No, although I've also heard that drinking hot water is like good for you, but who knows?
Just like straight.
Like there's a lot of people that drink it like before eating anything, with like cayenne pepper and like weird crap, because it's supposed to like help you lose weight somehow. I don't know.
That doesn't sound
spin-off
real.
Spin-off podcast. Drink hot water with various substances, see what happens to us, talk about it.
Oh god. Okay, well please don't do that, and now we're gonna move on into the recap, where I'm gonna tell you what happened in this episode, and Ezgi is gonna correct me, and Sophia is going to remember what's in this episode and what's in the next episode because she watched them both. Okay, so first we see Yasin like talking at Meryem about Hayrunisa and Psycho Girl, who I still don't know her name. And I guess I could look up her name because that would make
Wait,
this.
The girlfriend.
It's
yeah
something
I,
with an
yeah.
S, I think.
I forgot her name too.
I think it's Celine. I don't know if I'm wrong. I'll look on IMDb.
Is it Burcu?
Oh yeah, it is. Yep, it's Burcu.
Okay, great.
You're really close, Sophia.
I don't think they ever said her name though, to be
I
fair.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think she's just, oh, it's that girl. Oh no.
Right.
That's
right.
the vibe I have anyway.
And he's like talking about it, and he's like so confused about how the Hoja's daughter could be involved in something like this and what's going on. And then they like pull back the camera and reveal that he's in a hospital bed, which is just hilarious. And wouldn't be hilarious if it wasn't Yasin, but it is, so it's funny. And I guess she stabbed him in the leg or something. So,
okay, so the sorry to interrupt you, but the confusing part for me in this scene, and also it's been admittedly a while since I watched the prior episode, but I thought that, so he describes it as though he like put up a big struggle and like he
yes,
hit her
like
and
he
she
beat
hit him
her.
And
yeah,
but I don't think, did that happen? I feel like she just like went for his leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Not that
so
we
he was just
saw.
Yeah, okay. I kind of feel like he was just trying to make it seem like it was a fight between equals when like clearly he was the weaker one.
Yeah, actually that's a really good catch. You're right.
Yeah.
From what we saw, he didn't do any of what he described.
Yeah, yeah.
To Meryem, because he was like, I beat her and then I slapped her really hard. And then
yeah. Yeah, because she was also like, you hit her? Like what?
But
I have a question. This is might seem like a dumb question, or it might just be that we haven't talked about the show in a while, but like, where did the whole beef with them originate? Like, because I know that he was a bouncer at the club, and like they went together into the bathroom together, and like he saw Hayrunisa, and like he was confused because he like definitely recognized her, and then he defended her from the dog. But Burcu, for some reason, has always hated him.
Burcu hates him because of how he treated them at the
at
bar,
the
like
club.
kicking them out, like dragging them out, essentially. Yeah, and I think she's would never ever let go of a grudge.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he like comes upon them and I guess recognizes them from the club because they're
When they're
together.
together, yeah.
And then is like, what did you have something to do with my wife? And that's how the confrontation happens.
Yeah, because he has like zero idea where his wife is. Because he got that threat before, so he is assuming like a true horror scenario. But yeah, anyway, not that.
And he kind of comes to the realization while talking to Miriam that she Burcu had nothing to do with his wife disappearing because she was confused when he asked the question. And then he has this like long, teary monologue about how he's not going to bother Hoca about it, I guess, or question him about it. And Meryem is like very slightly sassy about how Hoca's not a civil servant anymore. He's retired. And of course, Yasin calls her on it. So then we move on to Hoca, who, oh, and Hayrunisa, sorry. And she's in her room and she's listening to music and bopping along. And then Hoca, her dad, comes in and he's like, what are you listening to? Foreign music. Yikes, what if they curse? And then they just have like a cute bonding moment. He talks about, he has a long monologue about talking to his wife and his dream and talks about going to the afterlife, which is concerning. And then Hayrunisa admits that she's going back, she plans to go back to Konya for university. And she tells him, like, you should go too. And he's like, where would I go? And so that's sad. But they're still like very sweet and loving to each other, which is not something we see with any of the other families on the show. Then we go back to the village, and Ruhie notices somebody is watching her. And that's it. And then we go to Gulbin. Oh, she's the worst. She's not the worst. Her sister's the worst, but I don't love her either.
No, I think she, I don't know. She was the worst for me in this episode.
Yeah, so we see Gubin's brother has taken a turn for the worse, and her sister in the other room arguing, and they just have a terrible argument where they're like really horrible. Her sister Gulan tells Gubin that she doesn't know how to keep a man, and she's also like, "You're a professor of humans, but you're awful with people. What's that about?"
Yeah,
And
I,
then.
revising my earlier statement, I meant the sister's the worst. I agree with
Yes,
you.
she is the
Yes.
worst.
I got the names mixed up. Yes.
After she's incredibly mean to her sister at the end of this really long rant, she's like, "Oh, God forgive me for being a bitch." And then she like starts to casually smoke a cigarette. It's like, what is this? Like, yeah, this is
Psycho. Yeah.
and then Kevin physically attacks her, which is hilarious. And they physically fight, but it's like very funny and silly. We
Also,
learn
like,
that,
neither of
yeah.
them seems to like draw the conclusion that their constant bickering and screaming could be making their brother stressed out and worse.
Right.
Like, it's not the weed and it's not anything else. It's you two being insane.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's clearly the fact that he can hear them screaming at each other from the room.
Yeah.
We learn that somebody kicked their pregnant mother in the stomach, which is what happened to their brother. So that's awful. And then they consequently left the village. So I don't know what that story is, but it sounds terrible.
I have some speculation, but like I'll save it for the gossip section.
Okay. And then Gubin like has like a heartfelt like, don't you see what you're doing to me, sister? Like you're making everything worse. Like, why are you picking on everybody and being so confrontational instead of trying to help? And Gulan, who is the worst, has no response except to just like loudly and aggressively start praying. And ignoring her sister, and she's the worst, just the worst. So then we go back to the village. We have our creepy guy who sneaks up on Ruhie, who's just like in like alone in some random ass area of the village.
The quarry,
The quarry. Oh, it's
which
the quarry.
they mentioned, yeah, they mentioned last time. Because I don't know if we talked about this last episode or when this happened, but like just to give context on the previous episode where Rohia went to the town and she went to her friend's house or whatever, and then she finds out that this man that she thought was dead is not actually dead. And she want like she was really upset about him being dead. So she's like actually, well, I don't know if I would say relieved, but some sort of emotion regarding
Yeah,
this
it's
man
very
still known.
complicated.
And I think she goes to find him, doesn't she? Because she goes to the quarry on purpose to see him, because he's always hung out by there.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but I guess she did. I don't know. Ugh, she's so inscrutable to me. So he comes up to her and she's really scared, obviously, but he puts a gun on a rock in between them and says, pull the trigger so we can both find peace. I say, yeah, let's do it. And instead, he makes this whole speech about how he was young and he couldn't control himself. And, how Ruhie embarrassed him in front of everybody because Yasin beat him in the town square, messed up his arm, his foot, and his face, which is the first thing I like about Yasin. Like, go Yasin, that's awesome. And Ruhie didn't even know about it. So, like, communicate, folks. Maybe this would have made her feel better.
Yeah, she probably would have had so much closure from that because she was
Yeah.
very happy when she saw it and found
Yeah,
out
she
like
was
that her
so
husband did
happy.
it. Yeah. Also, this is like our the show's anti PSA that revenge is good. It's like, yikes.
That's okay because for a second I thought they were going to make him redeemable when he started his speech, and I was like, oh no,
No.
I can't win
Yeah.
this.
They didn't, thankfully. They've done that on a few of the shows we've watched, but hasn't happened on this one.
Yeah. Ruhie says, like, we were kids, you weren't, and walks away. Which, who is we? I don't know that
Oh,
we knew this was a
well,
we.
she, well, wasn't her friend also like there? Or
I think
like
so.
there was like another girl there that, and that's like who the guy married, I think, in the end. Like
Oh,
that's
God.
his, yeah, because I think he raped both of them and then they like married him off to one of them. Is
What?
my understanding
Because
that
he talks about
late?
how much his wife suffered and like
Yeah.
how her life was miserable, but I thought it was because, oh no, it's when the whole town finds out that he was a rapist. Because I think when Yasin beat him up, like he made it really obvious that this guy was a rapist. But then it would be weird for him to talk about the suffering of his family if that woman was his wife.
Well, he his from his perspective, yeah, the suffering is that he can't provide for them because he's
Because
like
he's,
incapacitated now,
yeah.
yeah. But my understanding, again, it's been a while since I watched the last episode, but I thought that she was when she was looking kind of up from above at his house, and there was like that lady at the doorway. My understanding was that she was the other, like her friend, the other victim of him. And
Okay.
also like since she's in his house that he's walking into with like groceries, they must be married now, was my interpretation.
Okay, that makes sense. I didn't get that at all, but that makes complete sense to me.
I also didn't immediately clock the we, because a lot of Turkish people use like the royal we when they speak, so I just thought she was speaking in the royal we for herself, but yeah, I think there were two of them. Yeah.
Okay, then we flash to Sinan. This is the most I don't know, I
was
kind
this
of want random.
was this lady in the last episode?
No.
Okay,
We've
because
never
my
seen her
mom, when I was
before.
watching with my mom, she was like, oh yeah, she showed up in the last episode. I was like, what? Did she? Did we watch the same last episode?
Not that I know
Okay.
of.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a weird plot line, but okay, so Sinan looking very different because he doesn't have his half ponytail. I barely recognized him.
Like his whole personality right there.
Yeah. He's chatting with his mom at the kitchen table, and she's, I guess basically she's guilt tripping him about not being home because she fell and If not for the neighbor's son, she would have died there with no one knowing that she was there, which seems a little dramatic. And she's really rubbing in how much she likes the neighbor's son, Ercan. And then Sinan is like really dismissive about his late father in a weird way. So I don't know like what the deal is there, but I'm sure we will learn. And screams at his mother, classic. And then his mom says something really mean to him. And then they go to the living room. He apologizes. And his mom lays the dating pressure on him very thick and is like, and Erjan's the best. Goodbye.
Also, she's a hoarder. Like, what is that house?
Yeah, that house is really weird.
Yeah. And she also, like, when I was watching, I was like, this is like every stereotypical Turkish mom comment known to man. She's like ran through all of them. She's like, I have 20 minutes. I have to do it all.
Also, it's weird because we know he's quite wealthy.
Rich.
Like he lives in a nice apartment. He has a housekeeper. So his mom's living situation.
Yeah, why is she in,
maybe it's a nice place, but it's weird.
I mean, she's in squalor at least due to her hoarding. But it doesn't. It also kind of looks like an old building.
It doesn't. Yeah. Odd. Okay. Then Ruhiye finally gives Yasin a call. And she's like totally fixed, I guess. So that's something we need to discuss. But she tells him, don't worry, we're at the village and we're coming back now. And she's seeming a little manic to me.
Yeah.
So then we go back to Petty, who is wearing another hideous cardigan. She looks sad, I think, because Maryam didn't show up for their scheduled appointment, is what I inferred from that. And her mom calls her. Then we switch to Hilmi, who is the really chatty guy. And he's chatting with a turkey, which I loved that. That was so adorable.
It was really funny.
The turkey's talking back, which is just he's like Dr. Doolittle. And Maryam walks by, she's going to the bus, and he says, may I walk you to the bus stop? She says, don't you have work to do? And he's like, yes, but this is better, which was adorable. So we go back to Peri and her mom. Her mom's looking at a scrapbook, and she's basically asking about her dating life. It's a weird conversation. And then she calls for their like housekeeper or whatever, their help to come and take her teacup, but she calls the wrong name. And so we learn that Hazal was their previous housekeeper, and that's the name that Peri accidentally called Maryam. So,
which is like an undertone that there's like some class.
Yeah, they're like seeing them all as the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what causes Peri, that's going to be like impetus for Peri to change. I don't know.
Yeah, the fact that Peri called it out was like for me, like, oh, maybe like now she doesn't see them all as one, you know, archetype.
But I also saw it as like maybe she sees that she's becoming her mother, basically.
Yeah. Or yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever route route you need to take to growth is still growth. We Peri just needs desperately some growth.
Some growth and fewer cardigans.
Yeah, for sure.
So Maryam just, so we got back with Hilmi and Maryam, and she just seems really uncomfortable and bored the whole time and doesn't talk back, which is weird because we know what her normal personality is like. So the whole thing is, I guess she's just shy.
When he walks away, though, she kind of smirks, like, so
right,
she likes the attention.
Yeah,
yeah, she knows he's being a dope because he likes her so much. It's not like, yeah.
Right. So we suffer through this whole long theme of explaining Carl Jung and then libraries and then bus routes. And finally he gives her a little present. I think it's chocolate. I don't know. And she looks at it on the bus and she like finally gives this little smile. So
yes.
I think she likes the attention at least. I don't, unclear if she actually likes him or if she's bored out of her mind.
I mean, with her lovely brother, I don't know how she would ever be. bored or in need of conversation with anybody else.
Yeah.
Why talk to anyone when Yasi could just scream at you?
When Yasi could talk at you for hours. Okay, and then Maryam arrives to Peri's office. This scene was really sweet, and tells her that it's like, you know, just telling her like, oh my gosh, we found my sister-in-law, she's safe. And Peri starts crying. I guess she was just like really glad to see her. That's the vibe I got. And glad that she hadn't scared her away with her mistake. And then we're back in the village, and Ruhie and Yasin's son, whose name is Ismail, I guess, finally speaks. So she's super, super excited about that. I guess they're both healed by this visit and they'll be completely fine and happy now. And she also spies, as we said, or mentioned earlier, spies on her rapist who is goes home and sees his wife and kid, and he's rude to his wife and they seem miserable. And so I guess that gave her some sort of closure on that. So yes, that was a lot. So now we're going to move on into the gossip slash banter slash spilling the apple cider section to discuss it all. Would you like to start?
I think we should start with the Ruhie magically getting healed discussion, because I think it's weird because the show like tries to go really deep and show different sorts of like views of the world and like interpretations of things, and then like it focuses a lot on like mental illness and like people's relationships with other people and like the complexity of that, and then I feel like the whole, like, Ruhie is, like, now doing great all of a sudden. Like, Ismail can magically talk now. Like, it's weird that a show that has put so much time in, like, building these elaborate backstories and connections and, like, innuendos just, like, solves that. So
it's probably too early to call it solving that. I mean, it was like a total of like 3 or 4 minutes at the end where all this happened, and we haven't seen the next, well, I mean, I guess Sophia has seen the next episode, but I would at this point think more, you know, a high from the revelations. And then like the kid is like much too old to not be speaking, so clearly he was just choosing not to, and you know, the vibe improved enough for him to decide to do that.
I don't think there's enough reason for us as viewers to like understand why he would speak at this point
either. I mean, I think it's pretty on the nose, like she got closure and like he's picking up on the improved mood, so he's speaking. Like I'm not saying that it's 100% realistic, maybe, but like I think the story from a storytelling standpoint, it's pretty clear why like they would choose that moment.
But that's like my whole point. It's too clean, like it's too neat for this show, if that makes sense. Well, at least that's my perception.
I agree with you, Sophia. I think if they just continue with like happy Ruhie and Sun into the next episode, then that doesn't really make sense for this show for me. But if it was like she was super depressed and now she's manic and now she, you know, next thing we know something else, then that makes a lot more like real sense for this.
Yeah,
that would make a lot of sense. But yeah, because how old is the boy? He's like 8 years old or like maybe five.
I think he's like 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've done a good job of showing like how traumatic their life with their mother was up to this point. And I mean, obviously a kid will be able to pick up on that change very easily, because it's really impact, like just her attitude and like her in the car like hitting herself against the window, and like those scenes have been like really intense.
Also, so he's been out of like the argumentative environment for several days now, I think. So like, like it's not just like the moment of her being happy, it's like all that change in environment potentially is also leading to him feeling like he wants to talk now. Because I mean, certainly with Yasin's overreactions to everything, that's not really conducive to him.
Yeah, probably staying with that friend of hers was like very nice, normal environment for
Yeah.
him. That's a good point. 'Cause yeah, that's stressful. Like those scenes were so stressful for me. I can't imagine for like an actual child
Yeah.
living in that situation. Yeah.
Yeah. He's also very cute. I enjoy
Yeah,
watching
he's
him.
super cute.
He's very cute.
Yeah. And then like what do you guys think of like her name? Is her name Miriam? Yes.
The
The main character?
main character, yeah.
Yeah. Like her like warming up to Himi in some sense.
I like it.
Because
I think
the first,
he means well. I think that's been established.
yeah, I mean, I think the impression that I got from the show, or like from like this relationship in particular, was that like she felt so much responsibility over like the children and the house situation with her brother and like with her brother and all the stuff that she probably like wasn't able to really think about herself in any role different than her current role. And I think that's been shifting a little bit with everything that's happened, plus like her talking to Hiromi. And I feel like maybe that's why she's warming up to him.
Yeah, I like that. I like that idea. Yeah, I mean, who knows, but he seems really nice. And like we know she's actually a chatterbox, so the fact that she doesn't talk back at him is kind of annoying to me, but I guess
Yep.
once they both start going,
Yeah.
I do have a friend who is like that and is dating somebody who's like that. They both just talk all the time and somehow it
Oh
works.
God.
So
Oh wow.
it
Wow.
can work.
Maybe.
Yeah. It can work. It can work. And what do you guys make of the whole discussion between Gujbin and her sister?
Oh my gosh. I think if we just I just wanted to comment on like the kicking her pregnant mom in the stomach thing. So my theory, and this is just my personal speculation, because you mentioned like that happened and then they had to leave. And they, got completely cut off from their, I guess, like whatever family roots, support system, et cetera. And then everything fell apart further. My theory is that they were living somewhere rural, probably in the southeast or east of Turkey, where there's, a Kurdish majority. And in a lot of those small communities, it's very much dominated by like, it's very feudal almost, like the way the villages are set up, like, and it's not legal, it's not supposed to be like that, but you still have like, due to lack of kind of government investment in those areas over the last, century-ish, and or even longer, and kind of like the local leaders that have, like, in terms of like hereditarily, they've just that family's kind of always been in charge in that part of in that neck of the woods, and that just continues. So it is kind of feudal in that sense. The people in the village, if they say anything counter, they do anything the family in charge or the man in charge doesn't like, it can lead to really serious repercussions. So of course, like, we have no idea like what the mom or it could even be her husband, like, we don't know what any of them did for that to be, I mean, there's obviously no excuse for it regardless, but we don't know what triggered it. But my theory is that they got at odds with whoever ran their village, basically. And then that person ran them out as a whole family after also damaging the unborn child, etc. And Gudbin made a comment along the lines, and I think Sammy, you paraphrased it as well. But she was asking her sister, like, why are you doing this? Like, don't you see that you're falling into the same kind of trap of making us fight with each other like they did, like back where we came from, and like they do, I'm kind of extrapolating here, but also like what they do in Turkish society kind of writ large. And I kind of took that as not only the classic, Kurdish versus Turkish thing, which in this case doesn't really apply because they're sisters. It's I think it's more of the religious versus secular thing when it's really, especially in their case, they're women. Like, it's like you should be on the same side, because like a lot of these questions that get people, you know, all tangled up is around like how women should present themselves or dress or behave. But I mean, at the end of the day, what they're trying to control is what women do, on either side, not just the religious side or the secular side. And so I kind of, that was my kind of extrapolation. I will also say that I, you know, I'm watching this now, in the context of December 2023, when in Turkey right now, there's a very controversial show that just started, about a religious cult that's inspired by like real religious cults, and how women are trapped and abused, and also how there's hypocrisies on the secular side. So it kind of deals with both sides of the coin, in society, and that's just gotten everybody riled up, but more so the religious folks, but it's gotten everyone riled up. So I'm kind of, you know, and there was an episode in the second episode, there was a scene where a girl from the cult was scolding a secular man who was judging her, and she was like, "You're all the same because you're trying to control us. Like, the only thing that is consistent across both of your viewpoints is that you're trying to dictate what is and isn't right for a woman to do." So I've just, you know, I just saw that. So I was kind of thinking about that. And then also, that's how I read this argument, but they might have been trying to say something else, and I might just be biased from what I watched in another show. But anyway, I think it's in their best interest to get along as soon as possible, but they're very toxic.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah, what stuck out to me was like the weaponized piety, because that's mm-hmm. just
oh yeah, yep. The aggressive praying was like such a good illustration of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the lack of empathy from her is kind of stunning. So I don't know what possible resolution there could be there in one episode, but I'm sure we'll see them again.
Yeah, it feels like they need more episodes at this moment. Like, I remember really watching does. This. I remember watching this and feeling like it all got to like I was satisfied, but I also binge watched it. Now, of course, we're spreading this out over more time and talking about it in a more detailed way. So mm-hmm. hopefully I won't have the opposite reaction to the final episode this time through, where I'm like, oh, this needed like 5 more episodes for it to make sense. There's a lot of threads right now.
There's a lot of threads.
I have
yeah.
thoughts.
Yeah.
I have thoughts on that, but I'll save them for next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm also curious, like, are more of these characters gonna cross paths / interact? Like, we've seen Maryam and a couple and many people cross paths, but not so much interaction except for with Perry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it would be really interesting if they could bring them together in some way in the finale.
Maybe they'll all be on that soap opera together.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we didn't see that girl. I like that girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like where Perry is going. Like, I really felt that when she was like so relieved and happy to see Maryam, and I hope that she can actually help her.
Mm-hmm. And also get some help for herself, Jesus.
And get some help for herself that's not her shady ass friend, Gulben.
Yeah. She has to just imagine that all those sessions were completely useless at this point, because her friend was just like rolling her eyes at her every time they.
Yeah. Horrible. Anything about Hoja and Hayrunnisa?
I mean, yeah, wow. So he just doesn't know anything.
No,
and I feel kind of bad for him, because I feel like it's that moment in every like child parent relationship where like the child has a whole life ahead of them, and the parent like only has a child to cling to for like, I don't know what the right word is, but like it's that weird moment where like, I mean, the parent's life has been about the kid for a long time, and now the kid's like, sorry, want to have my own life, bye. And it's hard because it like coincides with the death of his wife, and it, he clearly is like very upset by it, but he needs to like figure his own life out.
Yeah, it's kind of I appreciate his character just because they could have made him like a caricature of like a an imam or like a religious figure, and kind of a community leader, and he could have been like a total like despot, or he could have been really mean or like two-dimensional but mean, and he's not mean at all. And his it's really clear that his marriage was like a huge part of his identity. Even maybe even more so than being a father. I feel like he's like very just wrecked and not having a wife. And her specifically, of course. And he's just so vulnerable and he cries all the time. Like you don't have like the machismo that you see with other Turkish men on screen. So I'm glad they went that direction with his character, but oof, if he finds out more about his daughter, I don't know how he's gonna take it. I don't think he'll ever completely disown her or freeze her out, but it would be really rocky for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if listening to foreign music is something to worry about, it's like
Yeah. Also, the
it's
foreign music is like boop boop beep beep boop. Like it's like that. It's like exactly. Like there's not even lyrics, sir. It's fine.
really bad foreign music,
It's
don't
really bad. It's like a
worry.
guy on his laptop for music. Yeah.
It's funny because he doesn't seem that much of a caricature, but then he like says those sorts of things and it's just like so funny.
That's to be expected, I guess. Yeah. Also, I will say Turkish people love their Turkish music. Like it's people will be like, "Oh, you're listening to that? Why not listen to this in Turkish?" So
Anything about Sinan? I don't really understand like what this added to his
and
character
why, yeah,
at all.
why introduce now? Were they
No.
thinking there'd be another season? Again, I don't feel like I finished the show thinking I needed another season, so I'm just like really concerned now that my first impression was wrong. This last episode's gonna be like WTF.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I don't need a tragic backstory for every character. I would rather not, but
Yeah.
why put in this relationship with his mom? Like it, that doesn't surprise me at all that this is their relationship. It doesn't
Yeah.
give me any new depth to him, like or dislike for him. So I don't know where they're going with that, but I guess we'll see
Yeah.
in the next episode. Predictions for Yasin and Ruhiye and their loving reunion? Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I remember a couple things about like how she makes her way back home, but I mean, like funny things, but I don't know. We'll see.
It's still fresh in my mind, so I won't comment.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think I hope that Yasin can interact with her without yelling at her for running away, because that will not put them off on a good foot.
I'm sure he won't yell. He never yells.
Oh yeah, no, he's never, he
He's
never
so
uses
mellow.
anger in response to the problems he's faced with.
So mellow.
Anything else for this section?
I was just thinking he needs whatever Gudvin's brother is getting for sure. He needs to
Oh yes, some of the ganja for
needs
sure.
calm down.
Yes. I think that would help him immensely.
Yeah, it really would. Also, I feel like they don't really go into it, but I feel like he's also got some like something d some damage from when he was like special ops or whatever, which they kind of like alluded to but didn't elaborate on. So yeah, th therapy plus maybe some an assist could help him.
Yes, agree.
Yeah.
All right, so now we are going to move on into the history section where Sophia is going to teach us about wudu, which is the ritual ablution that was mentioned in this episode.
So basically, wudu is an Islamic procedure where you cleanse parts of the body. So it's actually like a smaller ablution, because a full ablution is like you wash your whole body. And there are like four mandatory acts in the process. So you need to wash your face, then your arms, then your head, then your feet. And you have to do it in that order. And you aren't supposed to have a big break between them, because that's like part of the ritual in order to like stay clean or achieve purity. That's like not only physical, but that physical purity like becomes spiritual purity in a sense. And there's like afiq, so like there's some Islamic jurisprudence around like the norms of this of these rituals. And basically people usually do it before prayers, and it can be invalidated. So like even if you purify yourself, there's certain activities that you do that will require you to do the ablution again. So like for example, urinating, defecating, flatulence, deep sleep, light bleeding, menstruation, postpartum, or sexual intercourse. So as I mentioned, that's like the partial ablution, while the full ablution is called ghusl. And you have to wash your whole body for that. And in some parts of the world, there's also dry ablution, which is called tayammum. And it uses sand or dust instead of water in places where there's like not a lot of water, or like for some reason you can't use water. And then there's also, you can also purify the clothes and the body, and that's called tahara. So there's a lot of different ways to purify yourself.
When would you do the non-wudu, like any of the full ablutions? Like what are the occasions for that? Or do some people just like choose to do that instead of wudu for like all
So
prayers?
it's for some rituals. So like for example, after sexual intercourse and before Friday prayer, or for prayers for Islamic holidays, to prepare for the Hajj,
Okay. So like the
after losing,
major stuff, you get
like
the
if you
full.
lose consciousness for some reason, or if
Oh.
you formally convert. And also like Sunni Muslims do it before the prayer of repentance, Salat al-Tabwa. It's like a ritual bath. And there's some types for different purposes. So like depending on what you did, like for example, if you had menstruation, like as the Orthodox Jews have their like ritual bath, the Muslim women also have the bath, like or after giving birth. It's also done on people when they die.
That's the only one I was familiar with, was like the family, usually the children, washing the body that's to be buried. But I
Children?
wasn't, sorry.
You said children? So like
Yeah,
children.
I think it's usually, well, maybe it's like a, maybe that's more like Turkish funerary tradition, but it's usually like the sons especially, if it's the
Interesting.
father, for example. But I wasn't aware that there were occasions for full. I always thought it was just like the hands and the feet and stuff, so that's interesting.
But also apparently if you touch a dead body, you also need to do
Oh.
an ablution. But it like the Sunni Muslims do like have different occasions for it rather than the Shia Muslims.
Honestly, this is, very good hygiene practices that originated in the
Yeah,
seventh
that's what I
century.
was gonna say. It's like really fascinating when you hear about religious rituals that are rooted in like basic hygiene that was a good idea to propagate for everybody to do all the time.
Meanwhile, in Europe, Dr. Semmelweis in Hungary was like, "Hey, shouldn't we wash these sheets after women give birth?" in the late 1800s, and people were like, "No, are you crazy?" He was the first one to do it, and none of his patients died like after he started that, and then everyone was like, "Don't be ridiculous. It has nothing to do with laundry or washing your hands."
Yeah.
Germ
Well,
theory was not
that's
really
the
a thing
point.
until the early 1900s, so it's wild.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, wash your hands. Good thing. Yeah. And apparently, like according to the Quran, God loves those who turn to him constantly, and he loves those who keep themselves pure and clean. So it's definitely something from the Quran. And it said that like the Prophet Muhammad said, cleanliness is half of the faith. Half of faith, sorry. So it's like definitely very clear in the Islamic text. And It is mandatory for daily prayers, tawaf, which is this Islamic ritual of pilgrimage that's mandatory during the Hajj and the Umrah. Oh, it's when people go around the Kaaba. So yeah, basically it's a requirement for a lot of different rites. And there's a lot of hadith, so like different, I mean, Muslim texts and stories where basically the ablution is like very recognized and encouraged, if not mandatory. But I think that's really interesting to find out like whether the origin was more like if there was an awareness that being clean also meant being more healthy, or if it was just like kind of based on something religious and it had a positive health consequence.
I think people probably colloquially observed that, oh, this seems to help, and then
Yeah.
it was just codified in a, I mean, what more effective way to get
Right.
people to adopt it than saying this is, what God revealed to me. So if it works, it works.
Yeah. And then you can only use certain types of water. So you can use melted snow or hail, water of the ocean, lakes or ponds, well water, fountain water, or tap water. But you can't use green water, which is like water that has like algae, I imagine. Water made from trees or fruits, water that contains urine, blood, or stool, or has been touched by a live or dead animal.
Seems.
Yeah, and like used wudu or ghusl, like somebody already did a wudu, like did wudu or wudu ritual with that water. And yeah, so then, I mean, there's a lot of text and information depending on what, which like branch, or I don't know what's the correct way to say it, or like which, if you're Sunni or Shia. But yeah, basically, and there's like some certain like best practices or like recommended acts when you're doing the wudu. So you're supposed to recite the Shahada, and you should not engage in worldly talk. You should do it in a clean place. You shouldn't waste water. You need to start from the right and then go to the left. And yeah, there's different things. And there's some alternatives, like for example, if you have a skin disease or a disability or you don't have clean water, then you do the dry ablution that I mentioned beforehand. And they also do that in places where it's like really cold and you can get hypothermia from like wetting your body. And yeah, I think that's mostly about wudu.
Awesome.
Apparently, Carl Jung talked about it also, which
Oh,
ties
so I'm sure
into
he may will share once
we
we get
will
back to
talk
him.
about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
Like,
it
oh girl, I
says
hear you like
it
ablutions. Like all into Carl Jung.
says like most ritual acts, ablution may carry a wide range of meanings to those who perform it. The stain of ritual uncleanness may be felt as a real as real as contamination with unseen germs is for the medically minded. The act of cleansing may be only a gesture, symbolic of desired purity of the soul. Or, as Carl Jung and others have suggested in studies of unconscious elements, both objective and subjective aspects may be fused into the ritual act. So I think that's also what we talked about beforehand, of like how much of it is something practical and some, how much of it is like something religious or spiritual.
Yep. All right. And if you're walking around and you see a mosque, I know in Turkey, I don't know in other countries, but you usually see fountains or like spigots outside and you'll see people performing this. So that's pretty cool.
But they sometimes also do it not only in the mosques. I remember, I don't know if you guys remember, we were in a museum in Antep and people were performing the ablutions in the bathroom.
Yeah, I think it was prayer time. But usually you should use like in the airport and stuff, there'll always be signs saying like don't use these sinks for that. Use like the designated sinks near the masjid, which is kind of like a chapel, quote unquote. so they shouldn't, but also like it's more important that you get your ablution in than what, you know, as long as it's like clean running water that's acceptable for the faith, like people are going to use it. But if there's a designated ablution zone, like that's, you know, what people are steered to use.
All right. So now we are going to move on into our favorite and final section, which is what the fuck, Sultan of Success and Fatima's hit list. So, what are your what the fucks?
A mom storyline for Sinan, as we mentioned. I was just like,
Yes.
why are we watching
Yes.
this?
No, I mean, yes, his description of the fight. What the fuck?
Oh yeah. That was like fabricated.
I would also say Peri's mom. Like, it doesn't add anything for me. Peri is on her own journey, and I totally understand like her character, I feel like, and I don't think her talking to her mom does anything for me.
Her mom, I think, should have been introduced earlier, if she's gonna be like a whole thing. But this is like in effect her second appearance. And we're not really getting much from her beyond her being like very biased and very like neurotic and like high pressure inducing.
But I definitely do think the whole thing is to show A, Petty is like way more biased than she wants to think. Like Petty, I'm gonna say it very colloquially, like Petty thinks she's woke and that she's like progressive and that she's educated and Western and whatever. But like I think she thinks she's better than her mom because she like isn't as like, you know, everything should be like it is in the West and like whatever. Like I don't need to like be tolerant of people that are religious or anything like that. And then Petty, like both, like in her mind, she's equating Meryem to the woman that like cleans her mother's house in a way. And I think that is very telling of like who she really is versus who she thinks she is or who she wishes she were. And I mean, I agree with you guys that it wasn't necessary to like show that scene in that way in order to convey that, because I think she had already conveyed that through, like, for example, what she thought of the soap operas and what she thought of people who watch soap. Like, I think there's already a lot of like elements that have sh like made it clear that she thinks in a way that's not the way that she thinks she thinks.
And then Perry's cardigans, just. I don't have anything about against cardigans, but just the way she buttons them all up over her pants and they're like the V ones, and it's just bad. It's bad for her. Okay, Sultan of Success. I mean, it's gotta be Ruhiye at this point, right?
Yeah, I think
Yeah,
so.
or Hydronisa. Or like being able to go back to Konya and like keep her independence. Despite
She was
the family
a little too mopey this episode for me to give it to her.
pressures. Also, her alone in her room music dancing really needs some work.
Yeah. Automatic DQ.
Like, I get if you're not dancing, you're just like vibing, but like it didn't really, it was very odd. I was worried about her neck.
Yeah, those are big headphones. You've got to be careful.
What about Fatima's hit list?
I mean, the rapist, obviously, always.
Gulan.
Oh yeah, also always. As long as she behaves like that, rather, always. Oh God, who was I just thinking of? Just flew out of my brain. Oh, like Sudan's whole family and the neighbor guy. I don't know. They all seem really annoying.
Sinan's whole plot line.
Yeah, his whole plot line, anyone that comes near that thing, you're gone. Except for the soap opera lady. She's funny.
Yeah, she's great. We also saw like no consequences of him hearing himself being dissed by Gupin. So I wonder if we'll hear more about that in the next episode, because that was brutal.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he maybe the growth we're supposed to see is that he wouldn't have come and checked on his mother who fell, if not for how bad he felt about getting cussed out by humans to her friends.
Wow, he's a real humanitarian now.
Yeah, I think that's the arc.
Wow.
No stretching at all. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Congratulations to Ruhie. We hope that your good mood continues. Watch out to obviously the rapist. There's a gun lying around, so Fatma should be able to take care of that. And then Gulan and also Sinan's storyline if Fatma has time. Next time we'll be talking about the final episode, episode 8. And thank you all so much for listening. Thank you.